Hey, Monday, it's noon, just slightly after. We can't do the show on time. Why would we? That would be insane. But we're very close to being on time. And I already put up a poll on YouTube because I wanted to know how you're feeling out there today in YouTube land. If you're joining us on Facebook, hello, greetings. Hit that like button. If you're over on Twitter, hello, go to YouTube. It's more fun there. Go over to the Crossing Broad channel. Like the video, share the video, subscribe, ring the bell so you're notified whenever there's a new video on the channel. Where this show, whether it's Thursday Crossing broadcast, perhaps a crossed up with Anthony Sanfilippo and Bob Wankel as they dive into the Phillies, you want to make sure that you subscribe to the Crossing Broad YouTube channel. I put up a poll over on YouTube, which is, again, why YouTube's a little bit more fun. Some interactive polls. And I asked how your weekend's going, how your weekend was. And so far, good leads the way with 50%, meh, 30%, and great, in all caps, 20%. And I thought, what better way to bring the spirits up, to bring the mood up, break the format of the show where it's just me, and much like Tony Romo to Jason Witten, my ultimate safety blanket is here, and he's warm and comfy. Anthony Sanfilippo's here. Give it up for Ant.
You're going to ask me how my weekend went, Russ?
I know how your weekend was because you and I shared a lot of time together this weekend.
I would have picked meh. I would have picked meh. Because I spent the weekend with you.
Well, let's start there. We are going to get into a bunch of things because there are a lot of things going on in the city. I love this time of year, Ant. You know, a lot of times you talk to people who are in radio and they say, like, this anytime that the Eagles aren't playing is kind of rough. And when you have the Phillies and you have something new to talk about every day, there's like there are a little bit of doldrums in the summer. But like this time of year, the NBA regular season doesn't really matter much. The NHL regular season doesn't get talked about a lot on the radio as they kind of enter that playoff stretch. But you look at it, and there is a lot to get into today. A few things that we're going to get to in a little bit. The Eagles, they made that deal for Kenny Pickett. Justin Fields was also moved for a late pick. There are a lot of people in the city talking about if the Eagles made the right move there. CJ GJ's back. We had some people who, for whatever reason, are still obsessed with his comments on the Eagles fans at the end of last year when he left the team. So we'll get to that in a little bit. Anthony's here in big part because the Phillies are getting closer and closer and closer to opening day. And there's going to be a different guy on the mound than has been for the last 6 years. And, well, we're actually going to start with the thing that typically would end the show, but it's because you and I spent the weekend together. And it was really centered around a team that may be in free fall. Oh, and by the way, a fan favorite has retired, not from the current roster, but let's get into all this today. So, Ant, we spent the weekend together.
Yeah.
Because we did a live show together at La Cecilia for Snow the Goalie on Saturday night. And then we turned around on Sunday and we did a 2-hour show from the Flyers Charities Carnival. It's probably more time than either of us have spent with our spouse, or in your case, fiance, in a couple of days. I'm not saying that I love you as much as my wife, but I'm saying that I certainly spent a lot of time with you.
You did.
How are you feeling after this weekend? Your color has returned. You were starting to look green and kind of faded. You looked kind of
peaked.
Like long COVID Aunt San Philly.
Yeah, I was peaked yesterday. Yeah, it was rough. But I got back from the carnival yesterday and did nothing. I literally vegetated the rest of the day. I was trying to watch the, I was like, oh, I'll sit down. I'll watch the Temple basketball game, right? Watch, you know, Temple try and make that crazy run into the tournament. No. And they were getting blown out in the first half. And I fell asleep on the chair. Like I just was in my, you know, chair that I sit in watching TV. And it was just like, I was out. That's how worn out I was from the weekend, but it was a fun weekend, Russ.
It was
a good, it really was. I mean, it was a good weekend. It was great to get together with a large number of Flyers fans to watch the game against Boston on Saturday. And, you know, to their credit, they played well and came back and tried to get back into the game. There were some mistakes on defense and, you know, in goal that ends up costing them against the Bruins. I don't know if it's free fall per se. And I would not be surprised if there were a change or two made to the lineup after that game, especially on the blue line. I wouldn't be surprised if we've seen the last of Mark Stahl for a bit.
Bathroom Stahl.
After that game. I think that Torts is going to make a change there tomorrow night. But we'll see. We'll see what comes up on that tomorrow. But you got to give them a little bit of credit for not completely falling out of it. And, you know, Jonesy told us this yesterday. He's like, you know, wasn't happy with – the two games that they got blown out, right? The Tampa game in Tampa and the Toronto game here. And he really still wasn't happy with the win that they had against San Jose last Tuesday, even though they won the game, didn't think that they played their style of game. So even though they lost, there was something about the game, the way that they played, that really kind of made him feel better about it, right? And then we had the assistant coach Brad Shaw tell us yesterday that there's a real sense of, you know, revenge that they want to get back at Toronto for the way that the game unfolded last week, right? So, and they play them tomorrow. So I don't know. I don't know if it's a free fall at this point, Russ. If they lose tomorrow, I think we could start to talk about it in that vein a little bit more. But you know, if they come out and win that game, against Toronto tomorrow, hey, they're playing a bunch of really good teams, and they're just trying to hang around at this point, and that's okay.
Yeah, well, I mean, you brought up Saturday's game, and I'd be remiss if we didn't show this. We had quite the turnout on Saturday, and it was a lot of fun. It was funny because when we were coming up with, go there, Craig. On Saturday, we did the show down in Oxford. Now, Oxford's a lovely place, okay, but it's very close to the Maryland border. And the joke was that everybody who was there drove over an hour to get there. But, like, realistically, I think except for one guy who was local, and there was one lady sitting at another table who also raised her hand, there were only two people from Oxford. And most people drove an hour plus to come see Snow the Goalie because it is the only Flyers podcast. But we had a great time out there. It was a lot of fun. And the best part was, I mean, we had so much autographed memorabilia that was raffled off. A lot of fun out there. Intern Andrew dressed up like a leprechaun. It was a great time. And there were so many times that I think people were like ready to walk away. Not because they, you know, the third period came around and the wheels really started falling off. That's when we started doing the raffle stuff. And once the raffles were done, you know, people just kind of looked around like, do I want to stay and watch them get their heads kicked in? And surprisingly enough, the Flyers kept fighting back. They took a few leads, then they blew it, and then the wheels really did kind of come off in that game, and then they kind of rallied back a few times. But it was a great time. That night in a way, it's like reaffirming, right?
Yeah, and that's not even everybody that was there. I mean, you got to remember, we had a few people that left early, and there were some other people that were taking photos that were, you know, that weren't actually in the picture. So, you know, add a swath more of people on top of that. And then, you know,
not a swath more.
Not swarth more. Swath more. Swath more.
I said swath more.
It's Swarthmore. Is the town.
They call it Swarthmore, well, which is interesting. Yeah,
but there's an R in there.
Yeah, I know, but I said they call it Swarthmore. My wife taught there for a year, and I was like, oh, what's Wallingford Swarthmore School District like? And she's like, they call it Swarthmore. I don't know why. Silent R. Anyway, maybe they're French. It was a lot of fun.
Yes.
And then Sunday's thing was a lot of fun, too. The carnival was a lot of fun. Yeah. And my kids actually got to make it down for the first time ever. My wife was down there, and she just missed John LeClair, who was her favorite player. And it was like, it was the perfect moment because we're doing the show, and I looked over at her, and I said, he's right behind you. And she turned this way, and as she turned this way, LeClair went behind her, totally oblivious to what was happening. And then as she turned around, it was like a, what do they call it, Ant? It's like two ships kind of crossing paths in the night, or whatever, passing in the night. So it was a lot of fun, though. It was the carnival was bigger this year, I think, significantly bigger. And we were in a much more prominent place, which was nice. We had a lot of people come up. And my favorite part of the carnival wasn't my kids getting a picture with Leprechaun Gritty. My favorite part was as I came out of the bathroom after we had done our show, I hear a guy say to his girlfriend, wife, whatever, he points at you from a distance and says, that's the guy Torts went after in that press conference. That's the guy.
Yes.
But so you're apparently relatively famous, I guess.
Was the best part about that, though? About the whole thing? Bradshaw's comment. I wish we had that clip. That would
The Bradshaw thing? Yeah, so Bradshaw at the end of our show. I'll see if I can cue it up here. I don't expect Craig to. We get to the end of the interview with him, and I said, hey, I hope we didn't get you in a lot of hot water with Torts, that you're here and that you answered Ant's questions. And he just kind of cracked up and he said, well, keep it on the down low. So, good old. And the funny thing, too, is that Bradshaw, we transitioned from Bradshaw to Keith Jones, who ostensibly are like brothers. They look.
Yes. And the best part about it.
That tweet that you had pulled up before, did I have Bradshaw and Jonesy or not? Because if I did, we need to toggle between the pictures. Because we had a very interesting. If you haven't seen Bradshaw before,
the hair is almost identical.
Yeah. So the facial structure similar. The best part about it was the same.
You nailed it. You absolutely nailed it. Like we were there with Bradshaw, and there's all these Flyers fans because they're gathering. Right, there's events taking place right across, right in front of us, right at the arena, and all these people are snapping photos. And you point out to me, you're like, I guarantee you that 80% of those people think that they're taking a picture of Keith Jones right now.
100%. Like, without question. Because, look, I'll be honest with you. If we were just, like, walking through the carnival and Bradshaw walked past me, I wouldn't think anything of it. If anything, if I caught him out of my periphery, I'd be like, oh, that's Keith Jones. Like, it's enough. Like, it's close enough. Who was the guy that that he was upset with being compared to from his TV days? Jonesy. He said that he was fine. Mike Milbury is the one that he would get. And he's like, I didn't want to be compared to Milbury. But all right, we don't have that picture there. But if you go over to the Snow the Goalie channel, you'll find it. It was a lot of fun. We also interviewed somebody there who made crossingbroad.com a week or two ago. Young Natalie, mm-hmm. who is in New Hanover Township. She's the one who is leading the charge in that township to prevent the conversion of a hockey rink into a pickleball court. And it sounds like things have gone her way. And so she was on the show. And the funny thing, I don't know how old she was, Aunt. I'm guessing
she's
like
11.
So she was 11. I was going to say 10. Yeah. So she's 11. And she is more polished on the microphone. She was better put together than when you put most athletes on the mic.
It was great.
And I would even dare say than like when you put most radio hosts who do weekend shifts that people don't listen to. And they're like nervous because it's their first time on air. Yeah. She was better than that. So she did a great job of articulating what's going on. And Cindy Stutman, who was in charge of things for Flyers Charities, it sounds like she kind of like intimated that there's maybe something in the works there that the Flyers Charities are going to try to
work to help. There's going to be an announcement relatively soon. Flyers Charities is going to be helping restore that hockey rink, outdoor mm-hmm. hockey rink. To prevent the creation of pickleball, which I think is hysterical, right? When you think about it. So, you know, Kincaid was the one who actually first, I don't want to say broke this story, right? But I mean, like he's the one who first put this story out about what these kids were doing. And we also, if you remember, sponsored a pickleball thing with Pagan, mm-hmm. right? Like last year. And so it was kind of funny that it's like we're trying to be anti-pickleball when we did this whole pickleball sponsorship thing a year ago or earlier last year. And so it was kind of funny how that worked out. But, man, that kid was so impressive. She was so good. And I asked her, I was like, were you nervous? Because you don't seem one bit that she's like, I was nervous then, but I'm not nervous anymore.
Yeah, she was more nervous, I guess, going on the in front of the township council.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, good for her. That was a really cool story. That's like one of those times where you say, like, you know, you're a parent, I'm a parent.
Yeah.
When you have little kids and they have their hopes and their dreams and they're set on something, so many parents just kind of like crap on the idea and say, like, it'll never happen, like, don't bother. And then you have parents like hers who were like, okay, well, like, let's figure out how we can get you set up for success and like try to make it a thing. And so she and her friend, who I forget her friend's name, but they have been working together on it. And I think it's really cool. It's really, really nice, like local-ish story. So that was really neat. But Aunt, enough about what we did this weekend. Let's talk about what the Eagles have done in the last week or so.
Yeah.
I want to start with the return of CJGJ, who's a guy who this team should not have allowed to leave last year. They seem to be worried about, you know, like the thing when he came to town the first time was that there were concerns about him as a guy away from the field. And that when he was here, they were able to keep him in check. They had good locker room leaders and they felt like he didn't get caught up in any of the off the field extracurriculars or whatever the issue had been. He leaves and on a stream, I want to say like a week or a month after he signed with Detroit. And Craig, I don't know if you have that clip anywhere, if you can find it. But CJGJ essentially said that, like, couldn't stand certain Philly fans and that they boo you even if you're doing well. He didn't like it, didn't really jive with the fan base. And so then the Eagles, right or wrong, they bring him back this offseason. They desperately needed a safety, and he's a game-changing, game-breaking kind of guy that they desperately missed last year. And I saw people on Twitter who, instead of like celebrating the fact that they brought this guy back into town, were like, well, is he going to atone for what he said last year when he left the Eagles? Or is he going to apologize to the Eagles fans for the horrible things? And I went, Ant, it's part of the problem with some Philly fans. We're the hard-ass fans. Philly fans are the hardest real fans. We're the toughest fans. We expect the most out of our players. Blah, blah, blah. We're tough. No one likes us. We don't care. And then the second that somebody says something, it's like, oh, I can't believe you said that about us. I can't believe it. It really hurts. Like, yeah, who's he think he is? Let's play the clip real quick. Craig has it here. Let's play it.
That boy paid $5 just so he could get his shit answered. All right, fuck it. All right, my least favorite thing is the people. The fucking obnoxious, the fucking, I can't stand the fuckers. Everything, I say, the weather was a dub. I fuck with the weather. It was cold, but I fuck with it, though.
All right, here's the thing.
In fairness, he was live streaming. I don't know what that game was. It looked like a Need for Speed game, and I'm not sure if it was. It definitely wasn't like Forza or Gran Turismo. I don't know what that was. I don't think it was GTA. But he's streaming, and he was asked his least favorite, or his like the thing that he liked the least and the thing that he liked the most. He said he fucked with the weather, though, Ant. It was cold, but he fucked with the weather. But the least favorite thing was the obnoxious people. First of all, were you offended as a Delco guy when he said that? And two, were you aware of it? And three, does he need to atone for his sins?
Well, I was aware of it only because I had to be aware of it, right? I mean, we are aware of all the stuff that goes on with local athletes and teams and things, right? So I was certainly aware of it. Was I offended by it? No, you heard me laughing when he said it, right? Mm-hmm. And so that's the thing that we all need to do, is when stuff like that happens, you just need to kind of like, it's entertainment, man. Like, you have it here. You have, and just imagine. And I'm going to talk to some people that are a little bit older than you, just for a second. Okay, just for a second. Just imagine what would have happened with athletes back when we were younger if they had that forum where they could sit there, be playing a video game, and curse out a fan base. Right? I mean, just imagine what things would have been like back then. It would have been craziness. Right? It would have been absolute craziness. So, but yes, I look, it should be looked at and viewed solely through the lens of entertainment. And it should be a situation where, you know, you root for jerseys, right? Yes, you want the players that are wearing your jerseys, but you are rooting for the jersey, okay? So when the guy is on your team, you just want him to play well, right? You're going to let him know if he says something wrong. Okay, fine. But if he's playing well and can back himself up a little bit, by all means, we're going to cheer for you. When you leave and go play somewhere else, they're going to hate the hell out of you. And that's the way it is. And that's the way it should be. And when he comes back, you root for him again, right? That's the way, it should always be. They're one of your athletes. And it's no different, Russ, not to make another hockey reference, but it's no different than Gritty. It's no different than Gritty, right? Here's the thing. When Gritty was first came out, the city hated him. What the hell are the Flyers doing? This mascot, oh my God, it's terrible. It's awful. Look at that thing. And then all of a sudden, national TV started ripping Gritty. You're like, wait, who are you? You can't. He's ours. You can't rip this guy. And we loved him. And Gritty became our guy, right? And that's why Gritty was a success. So it's the same concept, man. You just, once they're in Philadelphia and they're part of your team and part of your culture, everything else is bygones be bygones.
He's such a good player, and on a defense that desperately needs playmakers in the secondary, and like certainly needs linebackers. Let's not forget, like what's his nuts that they got from Tampa is probably another one of these guys that like you hope he has one last run left in him, but certainly not somebody that's like of massive note isn't going to really help. At least if you're looking for a starter. They still need linebackers. But to have the safety position, or at least one of them solidified now, is huge. And it's a guy who understands what a Vic Fangio defense is going to be. right? And so, like, I think that they're probably in okay shape. I think that, like, at least at that position, I feel fine. Linebackers still in desperate, desperate need of help and depth.
Yeah, I'm going to be curious to see how he's used in Fangio's system. Is he going to be used more as that deep safety? Is he going to, because he can also play that, you know, like as a cover corner, as like a third cover guy, right? You know,
well, it was announced. Wasn't it Schefter who called him a safety slash nickel?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, so I think it's going to be interesting to see what he, how he's used the most here. It's going to be different than the way he was used when he was here the first time. Not completely, but it's going to be a little bit different. And I'm going to be interested to see how he fits in, into that system. Yeah, he's a good player. I don't think he's, you know, oh my God, the biggest difference maker that you're adding to your defense, and suddenly your defense is going to be good again.
But he's certainly a difference maker. Like, well, he's certainly relative to what they had before.
He's an certainly an upgrade. Yeah, significant upgrade at that position from what they had last season. That's for sure.
Yeah. All right. So we have that. Now, the thing that I'm sure you and I are going to have differing mindsets on, maybe.
Maybe not.
Is the Eagles' decision to trade for Kenny Pickett and not Justin Fields. And it's interesting because you go into last season and Justin Fields was still being viewed as a potential franchise quarterback for the Chicago Bears. Yep. Last offseason, there were even, like, you know, the national think pieces, right, where they're, it's very clear, like, an agent is trying to drive a narrative and or a team is trying to drive a narrative, and you start seeing some writers popping up with, like, oh, you know, you give Justin Fields some weapons. You give him DJ Moore, and, like, maybe things are going to turn around. And they got a sixth-round pick for him. So clearly, not only had they given up on Justin Fields, but the rest of the league, to some extent, had as well. Now, Kenny Pickett was a guy that, like, I think even when Pittsburgh took him, it was like, all right, you know, he played at Pitt, but you don't really expect him to be a guy that's going to revolutionize the sport, and you certainly don't think of him as being like a guy that is going to lead you to a Super Bowl. It was kind of like a draft him and see what you have. And, like, all right, so the Eagles had to go out and get a backup quarterback. They needed somebody better than Marcus Mariota, and they've committed franchise quarterback money and then some to Jalen Hurts, so you don't necessarily want to get somebody who's going to cause a controversy as the backup that people are going to clamor for if Hurts struggles through the first 2 weeks of the season. And they make the move for Pickett and not for Fields. People would say that Fields has a game that is more closely aligned with what Hurts is good at and maybe would have been a good system fit, even though no one has seen what the Kellen Moore system is going to be with this team and with Saquon Barkley in the backfield. I want to know, like, where did you land on this? And did the Eagles make the right call in acquiring Kenny Pickett instead of Justin Fields?
I think this is a very simple thing, and it fascinates me that everybody is so, you know, up in arms about this and debating this topic, because it's very cut and dry to me. Mm-hmm. The Eagles paid more for Kenny Pickett than the Steelers paid for Justin Fields, because that was the price that was needed to get Kenny Pickett, and that's all you needed to pay for Fields, which tells you what the evaluation is from football people around the league. It's not like the Eagles suddenly said, we're going to overpay to get Kenny Pickett because that's our guy. That's the guy we want. We're going to overpay for him. No, like whatever the deals were going to be, it was going to be similar to what these were. Yes, Pittsburgh got the best deal available from the Eagles, and Chicago got the best deal available from the Steelers for Fields. If the way you look at it, Kenny Pickett is probably a better backup quarterback in the minds and the opinions of real football evaluators around the NFL than Justin Fields is.
We have a poll over on YouTube now. Who should the Eagles have traded for, Kenny Pickett or Justin Fields? First vote is already in. Oh, we went 50-50. Now we're back at 100. Now we're at 50-50. Somebody changed their vote.
Yeah.
You can't do that in a real election, or can you? listen, I think you're probably right in that Pickett fits the bill, I guess, on a few different levels, right? As a backup guy and as a guy that's not going to create controversy, Kenny Pickett's probably the better guy.
I don't care about the controversy thing.
You think, okay, so
I really, the Eagles thought about that either. In all honesty.
So say Jalen Hurts decided to retire from football tomorrow, and you had to go into the season coming up with either Justin Fields or Kenny Pickett under center. There's no draft pick. There's nothing else.
I'll take
this. Kenny is all it is. You would take Kenny Pickett.
But that's because I believe in a more traditional style of quarterback. I'm fine with a quarterback that's mobile and can run. I just want a guy who thinks pass first, run second. And Justin Fields certainly does not do that. Yeah. And so Justin Fields would drive me crazy if he was a quarterback of my favorite football team. It would drive me nuts. So I would go with Pickett over Fields. Here's what I think is kind of an interesting thing. Now, far be it from us to bring up people from other outlets.
Oh,
but we know that
I love this media commentary.
Yeah, this is media but this is interesting.
I'm awake. Let's
so
go.
We all know that the king is a shill for the Eagles, right?
He's paid by the team,
and he never says anything bad about the Eagles, right? Everything's always on the positive side from him. Okay, he's on the radio this past week. I was listening. I guess I forget what night. I think it was Thursday night that he was on with Tom Kelly on WIP, and he says, "You know, this season is a very important season for Jalen Hurts. He needs to be better than he was last season." Now, that's as far as you're going to get on a football criticism from Howard Eskin, right? I mean, he was basically saying he took a step back. He needs to be better. This season is important for him and his future. That's Howard speak, because he doesn't know how to couch it in another way because he's Howard.
Yeah,
that's Howard speak for there's concern in that organization that he might not get back to the level that he was at when they went to the Super Bowl two seasons ago. And so when you when you hear that coming from him, because it's not like this isn't something that an opinion he's formulated himself. This is something he's been told. That's how Howard works, right? This is something he's been told. So when that's put out there, it makes you wonder what their thought process is. And so you go into this season, if Jalen isn't that guy, who between Pickett and Fields do you think has a better chance of being that bridge to your next quarterback?
I hate framing it like that.
Well,
Pickett's
got 2 years on his contract. Fields would have been a free agent after next season.
Yeah, but
what
I mean,
does that tell you?
Well, I don't know if it tells you much, because
I think it tells you a lot.
If you're in a situation where like Hurts doesn't have it from like in the first 4 weeks of the season, you're fucked no matter what. It doesn't matter if it's Kenny Pickett, and it certainly doesn't matter if it's Justin Fields.
Like,
it
certainly doesn't matter.
It's all over. If Jalen Hurts gets hurt in week two and is out for the season, it doesn't matter. Your season's done. You have a lot of great offensive weapons. You need a game manager, I guess. So if you want to play like the game manager who can be more responsible to football, then maybe you say Kenny Pickett. Like maybe that's the way that they go. But like, I certainly can't envision, and I hope that you're not implying that the Philadelphia Eagles, led by Howie Roseman, who, as many people know, has never made a mistake and has never paid a quarterback a year earlier than he needs to, franchise money. I'm sure that you're not saying that Howie Roseman isn't making an acquisition of Kenny Pickett with the thought that, hey, if Jalen doesn't have it, we can cut bait with Jalen Hurts at some point, and Kenny Pickett could be our quarterback for the next year or two until we draft another guy. I can't imagine that that's the idea, right? Tell me that I'm misinterpreting you.
How do you know
how fucking crazy that is?
Do you know?
It's a Monday. It's a Monday show. It's a happy show. My last name is Joy. We're supposed to shake off the cobwebs of the weekend.
We're supposed to
help people get over the hump on a Monday when they sit back down at their desk for the first time in the weekend, unless they spent the whole weekend doing a show and doing a carnival and editing and writing about North Carolina online sports betting all week. We're supposed to help the people, and you're sitting here inciting a riot. They did not get Kenny Pickett to come in and take over for Jalen Hurts if he's not good this year. Are you kidding me? And if they did, you need to have Howie Roseman march down the Ben Franklin, have his ass march to City Hall with the lady from Game of Thrones with the bell. He's got to be Cersei Lannister.
Shame.
Because if they do that, Ant, they can't go two quarterbacks in a row where Howie, a year before he needs to, gives at the time it was the biggest contract in NFL history to a quarterback, and then a year later say, oh, well, we're ready to give up. Are you kidding me? And by the way, if they can't even get him back to remotely the same form that he was when he was the MVP runner-up, right? If they can't get him closer to that than last year, then I also have questions about Kellen Moore or about how Kellen Moore is being allowed to implement a system. I think Kellen Moore is a very bright offensive guy. I think he is going to get Jalen Hurts back on track. I think that he's going to figure out a really great way to utilize Saquon Barkley in a way that they couldn't, you know, utilize Swift last year. But holy shit. If we're going to sit here and we're reading the tea leaves here on Howard Eskin, we're saying, oh, Kenny Pickett's going to be the guy to take over and kind of game manage, you know, if Jalen Hurts struggles. That would be that'd be a real problem. Real big problem.
Here's what I have to say about Howie. I've never seen someone in the world of sports, in management, as a general manager, president of operations, whatever the hell title you want to give these people. I've never seen someone who is so boom or bust. And what I mean by that is either they do an incredible trade, an incredible signing, have an amazing draft, amazing offseason, or they're completely terrible, right? There's like no middle ground with this guy. It's either he's fantastic or he face plants, right? Mm-hmm. And so like to me, I don't know, like to sit there and suggest that, you know, they can't possibly be doing this again. Can they?
Well, I mean, they can. Well, What's my favorite thing about Howie? Institutional arrogance. Holy shit, Ant. Like, this would be at a whole other level. This would be something that is like, I don't want to say unprecedented, all right? I don't need all the people to come out of the woodwork. And these unprecedented times. We don't need that. But my God, you can't do it again. You just can't. And like, I find it so hard to believe that Jalen Hurts is the guy we saw last year. I just don't want to believe that.
I think he's something in between the two.
And that's fine. And you know what? Yeah. Your starting quarterback doesn't have to be a top three guy in the league for you to win a Super Bowl. Partially due, in fact, to the, you know, Mahomes is out there, and I don't think it matters who your quarterback is. Unless you catch Pat Mahomes on a bad day, they're probably going back and they're winning a Super Bowl again. Okay, and like he actually restructured his deal to give the Chiefs more cap space because he's a leader, hashtag leader. But could they? Yes. Do I know in my heart of hearts that Howie Roseman is goofy enough to like orchestrate a move here and to kind of like do something dumb as shit? Yes. Like there are plenty of examples of it on the record already. But my God, like you can't, you cannot go into the season with a short leash for Jalen Hurts. You can't. Yeah, like
I don't think it's a short leash. You have to
play the season out.
Yeah, I agree. I agree.
And by the way, if he ends up being a middle of the pack quarterback at the end of this season, and they miss the playoffs or they're a first round out, then I think it's totally fair to have some questions. And I think more than anything, Ant, if that happens, you're more than likely, instead of it being on Hurts, it's going to be on Sirianni. There are going to be more questions around Nick Sirianni and his ability to coach if the team has a disappointing
result. The coach, or is he just kind of like overseeing everything now?
He's a pom-pom
like
guy.
Yeah, supervisor, right?
Well, no,
yeah,
but that's he's the guy that everybody likes, but
let me throw a question to you, and this we'll wrap this portion of the conversation up with this, because this is more than I ever thought I would talk about Kenny Pickett in my life. Mm-hmm. Let me give you a hypothetical. Let's say the Eagles win 9 or 10 games next year and are out in the first round of the playoffs, and Jalen Hurts is somewhere around the 10th best quarterback in the NFL, 10 to 12, somewhere in that range, right? So kind of, you know, slightly above average, but not elite. Do you stick with him as your quarterback for the season after that?
Yeah.
Okay. All right. If they miss the playoffs and he's 15 to 17, is he your quarterback the year after that?
Probably.
See, now you're starting to get into the territory.
But no, because I think at that point you are making a legitimate change at coach. And you know how coaches are. Coaches like to have their guy.
Yeah.
You know, is it possible that if you have another early out and he is a mid-tier quarterback, and you fire Sirianni like they should have this offseason, and you bring in somebody who's like another offensive mind or whatever, whether Kellen Moore stays or goes, and they decide, hey, we're gonna go for it with another guy, then I think that's like where there's – I think the reason that it's different between like 12 and 14 and 15 and 17 is because I think that could be the difference in whether or not this head coach is back. And I think that – and like again, will a head coach want to come in and take over a team that has Jalen Hurts making that much money if his underachieving in some way, which would be on him, costs the previous coach's job? I don't know. Like, I don't know if a coach is going to want to take that gamble. Maybe they would. Maybe they wouldn't. I guess we'll have to find out. By the way, Ford is maybe right here. Russ's wife. Hey, hon, do you want roast pork tonight or chicken breast? Russ. Are you kidding me? Oh, it's spaghetti bolognese! That's like partially. That's not true. The Joy household, very collaborative effort on the meals, on the meal planning, on the roles. Very collaborative in this home, for what it's worth. All right. I want to get to the thing that I really did, in fairness and in truth, really want to bring you on for, which is the Phillies, because you I don't know if I wouldn't say that. Well, I don't know. Have you usurped Big Bet Bob as the Phillies guy at CrossingBroad.com? Bob was the guy, and then Big Bet Bob became Big Corporate Bob. And now he's not covering as many games, and so you're the one down there glad-handing and, you know, spending time with the guys down at spring training. Like, I don't know. Have you attempted to usurp Big Bet Bob? Like, where are we at on the – where's the power dynamic on Crossed Up?
I wouldn't call it I usurped him. I would say that, assuming we do things like we did them last year, I will do two-thirds of the home games, and Bob will do a third. Roughly. I might be a little bit ahead of two-thirds. I might be more like 72%, let's say. Okay. But roughly, that'll be what it'll be. So, yeah, I went down to Clearwater and, you know, spent a little time with the Phils. And
got a little bit of sun, looking svelte.
It was nice.
I did have somebody send me a picture of you down there.
Yeah? Oh, yeah, that's right. You have that ready to go?
Were you? No, I don't have it ready to go.
The creeper
one? Of you, like, creeping over the gate outside of the stadium as people were waiting to get in, and there's you with your, like, buried in your phone.
Yeah, well, I was.
There's also the picture of you in a banana hammock that somebody sent. So I don't.
Yeah, we're not putting that out.
That was a lot to take in.
Yeah. No, that was. But no, the Phillies, they're a team that is just trying to get to the start of the season at this point. Like, they don't want, let's do that. Nobody get hurt. Let's just get out there. I mean, you got little middling things like, you know, Bryce Harper's got back tightness again.
Oh,
you know, let's just keep him, you know, he's like, oh, I'm sorry, guys. I just overdid it. I'll be fine. And he will be. He'll be fine. But, you know, he's at that age where you got to start managing that a little bit, right?
I mean, so, and maybe perhaps it's a concern if he wants to get like 4 or 5 more years tacked onto his contract that's already very long. Perhaps that's a little bit of a concern, maybe.
Yeah.
I don't know.
We'll see. He only missed one game last year for the back tightness, but he had it many times, right? So, there's going to be, you know, and there's going to be a few days where he'll DH, and we'll have to put Schwarber in the outfield and see how that goes.
God help us.
I know. Here are the concerns I have, and I think one of them is going to be addressed in the way that I think it's going to play out. Johan Rojas has not hit in spring training. He had a triple the other day, I know, and that was nice. That was the first like really well hit ball that he had all spring. But otherwise, I think he's hitting like 160 in spring training, and his OPS is like under 500. It's terrible. Mm-hmm. Great defensive outfielder. Phillies still have an option for him, so they can send him down and let him get right in AAA and then bring him back. He does not have to be on the opening day roster. And, you know, the thought was coming into spring training that he would be their opening day center fielder. I'm not thinking that that's going to be the case. I wrote about that last week while I was down there, that I don't think he's going to be the opening day center fielder. So that's the one thing I want to see what they do. And then the back end of the rotation. What are you doing with Taiwan Walker right now? I mean, he pitched a sim game the other day. Like, that's taking a step backwards, right? He got into it. He was delayed getting started. He had his first appearance in the spring, wasn't throwing any harder than 89, 90 miles an hour. And say, oh, well, it's only his first start of the spring. He'll get up to that 93, 94. And then lo and behold, your second outing is we're going to pitch a simulated game against our guys and not against the other team.
Yeah,
I really think that there's a concern there and that the team may make a change at the number five spot in the rotation at some point. I'm not convinced that they're happy with that. And to answer Kevin, we've got a little comment here from Kevin at I Rock Philly. Just want to put this up here. Rojas hit 302 and 149 at bats in 2023. You're right, Kevin, he did. But let's take that into consideration, what that 302 was. How hard were those balls hit? He was very lucky. He was very fortunate on a lot of his hits last year. Take a look at what he did in the playoffs, end of the season and in the playoffs, and how poor he was at that time. It's not just about
he was dreadful.
Yeah, it's not just about the spring. Yeah.
Yeah. Is it fair to be a little bit, you know, I guess I've been a little bit critical of Dombrowski this offseason in that, like, I get what you're saying about the back end of the rotation, but I once again think that they could have done something to maybe solidify the front end of the rotation. Maybe they will as the season goes on and as the trade deadline comes up. Maybe someone will break free. You know, like, I think we've talked in the past about Blake Snell not being somebody that really fit the bill for them, and there's draft compensation that would have had to go out to bring him in. Montgomery, I don't think that would have been the case, though, right? That would have just been a straight-up signing.
Right, but they don't want Montgomery. They want long-term, and they don't want to sign these guys long-term. That's the problem with going after a frontline starter is they want term.
And the Phillies don't want to be locked in for a long-term commitment.
Well, you look at it, and you got Wheeler for 4 more years, you got Nola for 7 years, and then you have two young kids that are coming who are going to, they firmly believe, are going to be part of this rotation for a long time. And Andrew Painter, although he's missing all of this year, and Mick Abel, who looked, for the short time he was with them in spring training, looked pretty good again. And like, they think that he's going to be up at some point this season and part of this rotation later this year. So when you look at it, you say there's four pitchers that for the next 4 years are probably going to be part of this organization. Yeah. We don't want to sign another guy to a long-term contract. That's why they were looking for something short-term.
I guess the way that I look at it is pretty simple. I want as many, and I think this is probably where you land, where anybody would land. I want as many top-notch, good pitchers as you can have. And if it turns out that that Abel comes up and he does pitch like a front of the rotation guy, well, then okay, then you move off of one of your more established starters. Like, let us not forget that this is a team that once traded Cliff Lee, right? Very different situation. But like, if you bring in Montgomery and you think that he could be a guy who could be like your number two starter, or like it's him and Nola at a similar level, or wherever they evaluate him internally, I would rather have that and have a known quantity. And by the way, in case something were to happen where you do lose Wheeler for an extended period of time, or you do lose Nola for an extended period of time, I'm more concerned about what happens beyond those top two.
Yeah, well, so you have
if you lose one of them, then you are in a really bad situation where, like, maybe they do call up Mick Abel, and then it's not a matter of, hey, it's a bonus if he comes up and he pitches well. It's, oh, shit, we really need the kid to pitch well.
The one thing that you're not taking into consideration here, at least I don't think you are, is the money. And really what it comes down to is this. If you're going to sign a player to a bigger contract, you're now going to go over that third tier of the luxury tax, okay? Mm-hmm. So not only do you get penalized with your draft pick, it's bumped back 10 spots, but now you have to pay all that additional money. So not only are you paying that guy some whatever money that you feel that he's owed, but now you got to pay an additional $35 million on top of that in taxes. So now you got to ask yourself, is that player worth all of that money? Like, who out there is worth what they want in their contract plus $30 million on top of it? Because you got to – well, that's the thing. And I'm not sure that there was a guy like that was out there this offseason.
And maybe that's what it comes down to. But I guess I look at the owner who said, get my fucking trophy back.
Yeah.
And I say, hey, it's great that he's been willing to open up the pocketbook as much as he has to bring in the guys that he has and to give them a legitimate chance. Like, we are now in – arguably the best, most competitive window Phillies baseball has had in a decade, but maybe longer. Like, even if you go back to the 08 team and how they kind of added incrementally and they made a couple of tweaks, you know, Worth for Ibanez. And, well, you know, we can remember the Abraham Nunez and Wes Helms platoon. We don't need to talk about that. But, like, if you look back at it, like, they are probably better positioned right now than they've been. And maybe you would even go back to the year that the Phillies had the four aces plus average Joe. And like you say, hey, from a pitching perspective, that team was significantly better. But this team has a better lineup and a more dangerous lineup top to bottom, with the exception of maybe Rojas or Pache being that guy. I look at it and I say, like, if your owner really does mean it and you feel like Montgomery or Snell weren't that guy that's worth that money to put you over the top, then I would certainly hope that they're going to find that guy leading up to the deadline. And that if there is a move to be made out there, even if it does hurt,
right,
it's one that you ultimately choose to make, because this is, you know, we say it all the time, but, like, there's no guarantee you get back to the top. And even when you make it to a World Series that you might not have thought you were going to, or you make a crazy run like they did a couple of years ago, there's no guarantee. We saw it last year. They lose to a Diamondbacks team they should not have lost to. They should have been going for another World Series. It didn't happen. Anything can go wrong. You lose a Zach Wheeler in the last couple weeks of the regular season. All of a sudden, if you don't have that pitching depth, you're screwed into this postseason.
In mind,
that's where I'm at, you know?
Yeah, like, so, and that's
we'll
fine.
See. We'll see if they put the money where the mouth is.
Was one guy this offseason who that they were willing to do that for, mm-hmm. and it was Yamamoto.
Yes.
And they offered at least as much as the Dodgers
offered
made
more.
Him. If not more. We don't know exactly what was offered, but it was at least.
If you read the tea leaves,
we believe it was more, but at least as much as the Dodgers offered, and the guy just didn't want to sign here, and that's on the player. So they did identify someone that they would be willing to do that for, but they looked at it and say, we would do that because the guy's 25 years old. We're willing to make that kind of long-term investment and have him be part of the rotation. We're not going to go after a 32-year-old pitcher and give them that same kind of investment, because then that's bad business, because that limits our window. That says, okay, we're going to try and win right now, but we're not going to, if we don't do it right now, then we're probably going to run out of time to do it.
Yeah.
Whereas if you go with somebody that's younger, you can sit there and say, okay, if we don't do it right now, we still have the window open for a couple more seasons. And I think that the Phillies window is right now probably about four seasons. Sometime in the next 4 years, I think, is your window to win a championship. And that's fine. I mean, you know, you went to the World Series, went to Game 7 of the NLCS. If your window is a six-year window, then you did something right, right?
Yeah.
You got to win it in there.
Listen, there's a case to be made that if the Phillies somehow were to win a World Series in the next couple of years or whatever, they might even be a more popular team and a more well-liked team than the 08 team. Which is kind of wild, because you look back at the 08 team and you say, like, well, everybody loved Chase Utley universally.
Yeah.
But then you look at the rest of the team and you go, all right, if you really do think back to the 08 team, who had the highest Q rating as we go into an election season, Ant? Who would you say were like top two, top three guys that were universally liked or appreciated on the 08 team?
Yeah, I mean, Chase, mm-hmm. Hamels, Rollins.
Mm-mm.
Well, Rollins had his detractors, but he was
I'm saying let's go like almost 100%.
All right. Then
it was probably Utley, Hamels, and there's one guy I'm thinking of.
On 08 roster?
On the 08 team that like almost everybody was like, yeah, I like that guy. I fuck with that guy.
Brad Lidge?
Nope.
Victorino?
Nope. Although Victorino, all right, then I'll expand it to four, because Victorino probably does fit the bill.
Shoot.
There's one up. Ah, fuck. All right. We'll go to five. We're just going to keep pushing it back until you get it right.
Pat Burrell?
It wasn't Worth and it wasn't Burrell. Nope. I see that in the comments.
I'm not going to go Ryan Burrell. Howard, because I know people didn't like
it. It was
Howard.
Somebody in the rotation.
Jamie Moyer.
Dude, who didn't like Jamie Moyer on that team?
Yeah.
The wily veteran, the guy that like...
Yeah.
I mean, he's an old man. He was an old-ass man.
Yeah.
And he... He was arguably like their most consistent guy as they were going into the postseason.
Yeah.
I loved Jamie Moyer. Absolutely.
Well, that's the thing about 08. It's like 08, that the rotation wasn't very good. It was better later. But the 08 rotation was not strong. I mean, Hamels pitched his ass off in the playoffs, right? But you're right. Beyond that, it was freaking Jamie Moyer was like the next most reliable.
He was almost like their number two most reliable best performer going into the postseason, which was insane. But yeah, like if this team, which by the way has remained mostly intact for 3 years now, if this team is able to pull it off, they go down to me as like the 93 Phillies, except they won. The way that like people still hold on to the 93 Phillies with such reverence, despite the fact that they didn't actually get the job done, this team probably goes up there because they have as many or more characters than that 93 team did. And you and in the social media age where everything is out in the open, there have not been any significant scandals with any of the guys on this roster. The most scandalous thing that has probably happened, if you want to call it a scandal, is that like there are some guys on the team who like clearly were anti-COVID vaccine. And that's about it, right? Yeah. Like that's the most controversy you've seen.
Yeah.
I think
the one thing I could say about this group of Phillies is they get it from a perspective of how to connect with the fan base.
Yeah.
I don't want to use the word pandering, right? I mean, everybody says, Bryce Harper is the king panderer. And for, you know, at times he probably does, right, pander a little bit. But, I mean, but he gets it and he understands it. And he's not alone. That clubhouse is full of guys that get it and understand that you can make your money. You can be forever, like never have to pay for a meal in this city again if you win a championship with this group because they are so well-liked. They are, and they connect with the people, and they connect on ways that have nothing to do with baseball.
Yep.
Right. I mean, you know, they connect with through musical playlists and clothing that they wear.
Ed Castellanos' son has become like a star in his own right. And like they're a likable group. I mean, like I get why people want to go to bat for them every year. I will say this though, Ant. If there's one thing that I want to see out of the Philly fan base this year, it's I want to see more people at games in the regular season this year. I actually thought that last year was kind of embarrassing, and I get that like people were hurt and upset that they lost the World Series.
Really?
But I feel like there were a lot
of
games last
year. Had the largest increase of attendance from year over year over any team in baseball.
I'm spoiled from the last World Series run team. But there were a lot of games, like even some games that I went to where I looked around and I was like, man, like I remember what it was like when this park was packed, when they were on the sellout streak. And I don't expect that every year. I don't expect that every game. But I do feel like there were a lot of games last year where, you know, as they would do the wider pan shots, I was just like, man, it's a little bit disappointing. And people didn't feel as all in on the Phillies last year as they did in, say, like 2009. Coming off a World Series winner, even 2010 coming off a World Series loss. The passion across the city and the excitement around the team wasn't the same. And that, well, I think is like where it's like a fair comp is the 2010 to 2009 versus last year to the year before.
I'll say this, because I do think that their attendance was really good. I mean, last year, again, they were one of the tops in baseball, biggest increase of any one team from one year to the next. So I don't necessarily completely agree with you on that, but where I will agree with you is on this. I felt like at the beginning of the season that they were coming off the World Series, that the excitement was high and you had a chance for exactly what you're talking about. Mm-hmm. And then they got off to a bad start, right? And by the middle of May, you were no longer in the divisional race. You were under 500 again. And it's like, oh, all right, last year was just, you know, it was lightning in a bottle, and that's all it was. And so the Phillies had to spend the rest of the summer proving to the fan base yet again that they are a good team and that they can go far. And so I do think that there was a stretch of time in there where you probably had less than, less than desirable attendance games. I thought there were probably some of them in there. But by the time you got into mid to late August and September, that place was packed. It was full. They were
solid. Like I think later in the season, it was certainly.
So
I'm looking at the number right now. So there were eight teams last year who crossed the 3 million attendees threshold. Right? They were 3,052,605.
Yeah.
They averaged 37,686, which put them fifth in baseball. Yeah. Just ahead of the Astros. I'm looking for, because you keep saying this year over year thing, so I'm actually pretty interested in it.
Hold, if you go, second. I think ESPN.
All right, now I got it. Now I have it here. So they actually led. Yeah, they led all of baseball year over year difference. Yeah. In total, they had just over 775,000 more people.
I mean,
and they jumped. They jumped.
I don't report things that are wrong, do I?
Well, your fingerprints were all over that data. all right, I want to get to this really quick before we head out because. Ford is asking it, and he's asked a bunch.
I wanted him to pay for this question.
Ford, you know what? Then fine, let's take it down. And if Ford sends a super chat, then you'll answer.
He only asked it 600 times.
He asked about it. So he said, "Do you like eggplant parm? And do you cook it yourself ever?"
I do like eggplant parm, and I never have to cook it for myself because Maria cooks freaking everything, and she's amazing. So
I can co-sign that Maria is very, very good as a cook. There was the time that PHLY tried to buy and rebrand our hockey podcast, and I came to your house, and that was interesting. She made the cutlets, and they were fantastic.
Yes.
And then I met Papa Sanfilippo, Papa Sanfilippo. So my wife said, she was like, Anthony's parents are so nice. They seem like such nice people. Yeah. And she didn't say anything about negative about you, but like, I kind of felt the same way.
Like, where did he come from?
Yeah, like when I met Papa Sanfilippo the first time, I was like, oh, okay, like, good guy, big guy, huge hands, big fucking hands on that guy, big mitts.
My dad's tall. My dad's a twin, and he's that tall.
Is really?
That great? Yeah, it's rare.
Is his twin also tall, or did he eat all the big human genes?
My dad and my uncle are both 6'2". Yeah,
that's pretty tall. He's a big dude.
Yeah.
I mentioned another outlet, so I do have a question because we kind of talked about the possibility of bringing up media here, and we love media commentary because it is crossing broadcast. 97.5 shuffled their lineup, which I think is interesting. And I listened this morning for the first time in probably since John Kincaid first came to the station. I listened because they rebranded and Kincaid wrote about it over on the website, but John Kincaid certainly sound, at least in their first show, him and Sal Chunas, he certainly sounds as though he's the second voice on the show. He's the lead on the marquee. It's Kincaid and Sal Chunas. But Sal Chunas drove that show this morning. I don't know if you had a chance to listen, if you
I
had
did
any
not.
Thoughts. Okay.
No, I did not. It'll be interesting to see what they do there. There's a lot of rumors that, what's going
to
happen.
I want to get to the other thing first, but I want to address this one first.
Yeah, I mean, it's one show, maybe, Russ, and I don't know how long you listened. I mean, if you listened for an extended period.
For about hour 15 or so this morning.
Pretty good, yeah.
I like to make sure that I have at least a decent enough sample size as we talk about, a show on the first day. Yeah. I guess the reason that I put stock into it is this, okay? You know me, Ant. I'm not one to hold punches, pull punches on what I perceive in media in the city.
Yeah.
When 97.5 put out the best show ever, what I had been told and what I had heard was that they were going to go for kind of like a morning show in the afternoon, and that it was going to be Tyrone and Ricky Bo and Broads and Jen, and they were all going to have like a somewhat equal voice on the show. And I was like, all right, cool. Like, I'll tune in. I'll check this out. We'll see how it goes. Because remember, after Missinelli left, Tyrone took over, and he was the lead voice on that show. It was his show. And I was like, well, that's interesting that you're going to move the guy from being lead to being part of an ensemble. But okay, let's see how it goes. And I listened to that first show, and I went, this is very much the Tyrone and Friends show. This was not a cast and crew show. This was not even a lead guy who is less of a lead than normal and is just kind of like navigating traffic. It was very much his show. So I was interested this morning because I was like, all right, like, is Kincaid really going to take second seat, which is what had been rumored? And I do think that he was today. And maybe that's him trying to give Sal Chunas the ability to lead a little bit. And maybe it's him trying to get the morning show people who are used to hearing him on the radio getting the chance now to listen to Sal Chunas and to kind of get better acquainted with him. If it's morning show people who don't stick around for the middays typically, I thought that was interesting. Maybe more so is what's rumored to be coming next, because they didn't touch the afternoon show, which I thought was surprising. And I will tell people without question in the camera lens and to those who are listening in the podcast feed after the fact, just imagine me staring into your soul. The consensus across Philadelphia media, and I mean fucking everybody, except for like two people, that I've talked to. I've talked to many people. People going, why the hell are they not changing the afternoon show? And there are a few theories out there, but for the most part, people are like, the afternoon show doesn't work. This is the time to shake it up. They are not. And it appears as though they're going Mike Missanelli in the middays, or at least there are conversations about Mike Missanelli joining Bob Cooney.
I've heard
in the middays
so many times from so many different places. I've heard that that's happening. I haven't talked to Mike directly.
Well, he might punch you like he did all those years ago.
No, he never actually hit me. He didn't
Maybe will threaten. Is he going to throw headphones at you like he?
Mike and I have
it's a loving relationship. Is it positive?
Water's under the bridge by now.
Did you share a bottle of his wine?
No, we didn't. But we had a couple good conversations. We kind of settled things after a nearly 2-decade long cold war.
Wow.
For lack of a better term.
Maybe it's going to be Missanelli, Cooney, and Aunt San Philly in the middays.
We had a conversation for the first time last year at spring training. Mm-hmm. It was spring training 23, and we sat down and we talked a lot. I sent him a message when he was let go. The reason we sat down there is because when he was let go earlier, just before
unceremoniously.
That
was bad luck.
I actually sent him a message and I said, hey, listen, I know that we haven't spoken in a long time, but I just wanted to let you know what I thought of you being let go. I think it's a shame the way it went down. You were one of the greats in this city doing what you did for so long. And just wanted you to know that I felt that way. And so I think that that's why he was willing to sit down and chat with me. At spring training, we talked. And then, of course, you know, I checked in with him with the whole PHLY thing last summer.
That's right, because there were rumors probably a month ago that he was maybe going to be doing something over there with Gargano getting ready to do his show, that maybe they would go the Missanelli route. Missanelli's doing the podcast, right? He's doing a podcast with
Parks,
Bet
right?
River, or Bet River. River. I think his is with Bet Rivers.
Bet Rivers, okay.
Most people who leave the Fanatic end up getting a podcast with Bet Parks. But I think he was the one who did Bet Rivers.
Okay. That's what it was. Yeah.
So
So the number of people that I've heard it from too makes me think that it's happening. I can't imagine that it's just some kind of wild rumor that everybody behind the scenes is just buying into. I think there's probably some legs to it. For a midday show, I think it would work. For midday. And then here's my thought on it. Here's the reason why I think that they're doing it. If you look at, you say, you know, if they want to compete with WIP, what show can you target as probably the weakest link at WIP? It's got to be the midday.
I don't know.
It's not the morning show. You're already losing to the morning show already, right?
Pretty significantly.
It's not Ike. It's not going to be Ike and Spike.
No,
and Fritz.
It's not going to be Ike and Spike and Fritz.
Right.
Although I think that Spike going there is what ultimately keeps them at number one in the afternoon.
Yeah. So
I think they pretty desperately needed another person. I spoke very glowingly a week or two ago about Ike, and especially how Ike handled the AJ Brown interview.
Yeah.
And like, I think he's very, very good. And I think Jack is still kind of finding his way in that role, going from producer to host. Which isn't to say that he's bad by any means, just that, like, I think they probably needed somebody else who's been in that role before. I think Spike fits that.
So in that regard,
I think that morning
is the show to go. Yeah, but
I think that morning show. So the problem
is the morning show beatable? It certainly is, but you don't have the people there right now. And maybe Missanelli doesn't want to work.
That's the thing. I don't think Missanelli wants to work the mornings. See, the interesting thing here would have been, put on the conspiracy theory hat. All right, ready? So I think that if you're more concerned with the fact that WIP has been the leader forever in the morning, that like you might, I'm not saying this is the thought of the station, but like you could put a monkey with cymbals clapping and it would still win in the morning. And maybe that's the thought, is that like they want to give DeCamera and Runyon the ability to like run that show for a while. Richie.
Yeah.
I always got those guys confused. I don't know why. One played line, one was a fullback. But like you want to give those guys the ability to find their footing with the show, see how it goes, see if Kincaid and 97.5 were able to kind of chip away at that lead. And maybe you just think of that morning show as an institution, and it doesn't really matter who's in those chairs. It's just going to win, and it's just going to work. And like, maybe that's it. Like, maybe it has. It's as much of that. If Missinelli were 40,
you have a valid point. But what I think is that if your goal is to eventually take them down, you have to find the weak spot first. You can't go over. Can't chase the big one first, because if you don't hit, you're not going to win, right? So you got to try and make inroads where you can. And so you identify where you think you can line up somebody to actually take listeners away. And Mike can take listeners away from Joe Giglio, because there's, believe it or not, there's a lot of people who don't like the hot take kind of mentality of that show. And so if you go back to something that's a little bit more traditional on 97.5, at that same time slot, you can take listeners away. And then if all of a sudden you're starting to win a book and it comes out like, oh, by the way, 97.5 won a book that WIP didn't win. Now some people are going to be intrigued. Oh, wait a second. Maybe I don't ever listen to 97.5, but now they're winning something. Maybe I should go check them out. And then you start to pull people in other places.
Maybe. Or maybe.
That's a long-term strategy.
All right, so let me play this one out, because I actually like Joe and Hugh's show. I enjoy their show. I know you're not a big Joe guy, but I think that Joe and Hugh do a really enjoyable show. I do like what they do. I look at it maybe like this. 97.5, for whatever reason, doesn't want to touch the afternoon show that doesn't work, and nobody seems to really enjoy all that much. Perhaps the thought is that they're going to try to improve the lead-in to the afternoon show. That, yes, they can go after that midday show, and that they can probably pull a significant chunk of listeners away, just because Missinelli has so many fans in the city. And that not only will it help them in the middays, but it gives the afternoon show a better shot. And if we're being honest, when Gargano was doing middays, he had some good books. But as a whole, the morning show on WIP was such a great lead-in to that midday show that they had at the time that Gargano wasn't pulling as many people away as I think they wanted him to. And then when he left and you gave it to Sal Chunas, it was like, oh, there's nothing in place here. There's not another guy in the pipeline that they were ready to move in. They didn't have like John Marks at the ready to go in and slide into middays, right? Like maybe it's a good strategic move. You try to pull people away in middays and try to give the best show ever a lead in the afternoon. I think that ultimately the afternoons are going to stay where they're at. I think that the mornings are going to stay where they're at. It'll be interesting to see, like, if Missinelli's in there, like, let's see, two ratings books, three ratings books. If there's a significant move there in the middays, I'll throw this as the last thing, I guess. I am very surprised, and I'm also not, that Marx's name hasn't been thrown around more. And it's funny because in a way, we used to just say the incestuous relationship existed between WIP and the Fanatic. But PHLY is like kind of a third party in all of this. They're like involved on the periphery. Right, like when they got Gargano, and the way they got Gargano, and the way that they got some other people from radio to go there may have resulted in a lawsuit that has since been settled. It's interesting to me that like you haven't heard more about Marks being a guy that they'd want to slide into middays, or that they didn't have Marks return to mornings where he and Gargano started that show together when they pulled away from being Mike and Mike. I was surprised. Now, does this mean that John Marks is going to go to PHLY and do another show? That's another interesting wrinkle to this, you know? Because I think as soon as he left WIP, the two places that everybody heard were going to be interested in were the Fanatic and PHLY. Well, if Marks isn't going to go in and take over middays, and if they've now set up a morning show, and Marks isn't going to go back to WIP, then it would seem to say that PHLY is the place, or...
Joy Media?
No. Or they're, although he's always welcome, but or they're going to say, all right, Marks has a number in his head of what he thinks he's worth and like where he wants to be. Could they look to see what happens to their afternoon ratings if Missinelli comes into middays, and if the afternoon ratings don't move but the middays do, and instead of it being, hey, a low number that becomes a slightly better number from middays to afternoons, if it all of a sudden becomes, hey, middays are now a thing and they're getting a big number and then there's a significant drop off to the afternoon, do they then pull the Marks lever a few months from now and put him in ahead of football season? Do they try to back up the truck for him and try to bring him in to do the afternoon show at that point? Yeah, and that, I think, is actually the more intriguing thing. What do you think? You're a radio guy. You used to do radio stuff. We did some 610 radio stuff, but you did bigger radio stuff back
then. I don't
when
know.
The world was in black and white. But like what like what do you think?
I don't think Marx goes back to 97.5, but it's not a bad idea. It's not a bad approach. I just don't see him going back there. I don't know. PHLY is interesting to see if he would go there.
I just in general am like very interested to see what's going to happen there when Gargano starts.
So and I think that I think it's interesting that you mention that, because take note that nobody at 97.5 and nobody at WIP has PHLY people on as guests on their shows.
It's true.
Why not? I think that they look at PHLY as more of a contender or competition for them than as a competition for, the regular, more traditional media outlets like the Inquirer and NBC Sports Philly and the Athletic, right? I think that they look at PHLY as more of a broadcasting arm and less of a written content arm, and so
it's
therefore,
like where that's kind of like where the company tends to put more of its resources.
Well, it's turned out to be that way, right? I mean, turned out to be, it wasn't kind of suggested to us that way when we were talking to them.
You paid attention. I don't know how much you paid attention to that meeting.
That was the one meeting you were on. I spoke to them multiple times, right? So like, it's interesting to me that, you know, that they don't have them on as guests, and there's a reason for that. And I think that they're sitting there saying, you know, so it's going to be, you're right. It's going to be curious to see which, you know, can they make a dent into the WIP
97 and the 97.5 thing.
I don't know.
This is really going to be the ultimate. And like, again, if I were Marx, I absolutely would have sat out. I would have waited. Like the way that he's kind of out of it for right now, I'd do the same thing.
Yeah.
Because one of two things is going to happen. Gargano's show will debut, I think, next month, right?
Yeah.
Gargano's national NFL show with Baldy did not do big numbers at all. I don't want to be mean, okay? Because I've kind of gotten out of the business of being mean and attack dog. I'm a chihuahua. But when they launched that show, that felt like, oh, shit, we're paying this guy a lot of money and he's not allowed to do any of the stuff that we hired him to do locally. So, like, let's get him on a national show. That didn't do significant numbers. And so I'm not saying that they took the bloom off the rose, because ultimately he's still going to be doing a local show. But I'm going to be really interested to see what kind of people go over and gravitate to that show, because I find it really hard to believe that a bunch of 50-something, 60-something-year-old people are going to all of a sudden learn about YouTube and are going to like change their entire listening to go to YouTube. And unless they have another way that they're going to stream the show, I don't see a lot of people who like are in the car all day, that are driving, that are doing those kinds of jobs, are going to like pull up YouTube and like listen to the show live. I just don't believe it. I don't think it's going to work. I think that for a younger audience that might like him, it's an easy thing. And in some ways it's easier to go to YouTube than it is like even to go to the respective sites and sit through a bunch of ads. That's going to be interesting. If it works and you're John Marx, then you say, okay, like maybe I take one of the other spots, a show that leads into it or a show that comes out of it, probably leads in based on like the family stuff. You would think that maybe he would want to lead into Gargano. I don't think that they're going to team up and do the show together. Could be wrong. I think it's going to be interesting. We'll see if it works or not. I've been very skeptical of it. Even going back to our conversations that we'd had with them, I was very skeptical of whether or not Gargano going from radio to YouTube was going to be something that was going to be a paradigm-shifting move in Philly sports media. And for better or worse, he's been on ice now for longer than they ever thought he would be. And he's not launching the show during football season, so it's going to be, potentially, it could be a really rough thing. The other thing, Ant, that maybe is underrated or overrated, which you can speak to, and then we can end. I don't know how this works with, you have these shows that are going 5 days a week, and now you're going to have another show that's going to be doing it at the same time. and potentially taking live viewers away from your team-specific shows. And then if I don't know how that works.
I look at it and say that your hardcore fans are still going to stick with the team-specific shows, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, they really are. They're going to stick with them. That's just the way it is. But there is a branch of casual sports fans in town. I think there's it's a smaller market, but I think that there is a branch of them that don't want to get into the deep dives of these teams and just want to be, you know, top level and entertained. Yeah. And I think that could be an attractive show for them. But I do think that you won't get much crossover. I do think that there's going to be a lack of crossover. Mm-hmm. To be honest, I'm not going to sit there and say, all right, I have time. I have an hour. I'm going to listen to a podcast. Am I going to listen to the one about the team I want to listen to, or am I going to listen to the general sports one? I don't know. I'll pick one of the two, but I'm not going to listen to both.
Yeah.
It'll be interesting. The same thing.
I feel like at some point then it becomes a matter of if you're going to do the general show, that's going to be the priority because he's making the most money by a significant margin. Right. Yeah. So that has to be the priority. And then it becomes, do they see that the live audience drops significantly on the team-specific shows, and it kind of goes back into being more of like that podcast that you listen to after the fact? But I mean, look, we can kind of speak from our experience, right? Like, we've done more shows this season, doing Snow the Goalie and Press Road Show and Morning After for the away games. We've done more shows than ever. We're very lucky in the fact that, for the most part, we've grown the audience in terms of unique listeners, and that from episode to episode, we're generally in the same range of how many people listen to everything. The Morning After ones are usually a little bit lower. If you look at YouTube, like, you can see they're a little bit lower because it's the next morning. And like, there's probably less of a timeliness to it because by that point, you've kind of mentally cleared away from that game from the night before. But like, I've heard a lot of people who are podcast listeners who are my age who have said, I don't like the move, not for our show, but like, I don't like the move for a lot of their shows where it feels like it's watered down. And because you're doing it every day and you're only allowed to talk about one team, that it's taken some of the special quality of it away. It's an interesting business model. It's certainly something that they found success with in other markets. I just don't know how it's going to work here.
You know what the most interesting thing is to me?
What's that?
And I agree with that philosophy that it's, you know, it does water it down because you got to talk about something every day. Mm-hmm. The one sport where you can talk about it every day is the one sport that they don't seem to be making as much of a commitment to. And that's baseball.
Yeah.
Right. I mean, that's the one sport where there is something new to discuss every day because there's a game the night before. Right. And now, so now, okay, let's talk about the game from last night and look ahead to tonight. Like, if you really wanted to do a daily baseball podcast,
162 games.
It's the one that works as opposed to football and basketball and hockey. And yet, it's the one that they've made the least investment in.
Yes.
As far as bringing people.
Well, they tried to patchwork it last year as things were getting closer to the playoffs. And again, we had conversations. So, like, I'm not afraid to say, they very clearly didn't value baseball when they were breaking into the market. They wanted Matt Gelb. Matt Gelb couldn't leave his deal with The Athletic. He was the lone guy that was tied into a deal that they did not want to allow to leave, and he was under contract. When his contract is up, will he follow the rest of the last wave of Athletic guys over there? I have no idea. But that was clearly the plan. Matt Gelb is a really good writer. Do I think Matt Gelb is a dynamic personality who works well on camera? Probably not. But I think that, like, again, that's their business model. And I don't think that everybody who's over there also fits that bill. In fairness, there's a very different – I think it's incredibly rare that you find somebody who's a really good writer and who fits – who, like, scratches that itch and is also a dynamic personality in the audio medium and then is also engaging in the video medium. They're kind of like unicorns. And when you find them, they typically get national gigs. So there are some people over there who I think are like really good at two of the three or are good at one of the three, but they don't fit three for three. It's really hard to do. But we'll see what happens there. Like, I'm really interested to see what they end up doing. So And probably a good place to stop, unless there's anything else you wanted to get to. I told you we'd do 35 minutes. We did far more than that. This is what happens when you and I get together. We didn't spend enough time together this weekend with a live show in the carnival, so we just spent almost an hour and a half of our time together on a Monday.
I need to get my priorities in order.
You do, which is why tomorrow Ant and I will be live from Wells Fargo Center for the Press Row Show as the Flyers take on the Toronto Maple Leafs in a game where they're hoping to get some revenge. We'll be joined by our good friend Bundy. It's going to be a lot of fun if you're at Wells Fargo Center tomorrow for the Flyers game. Take the elevator through the glass doors by section 121 all the way up to the balcony. Tell them you're going to the sports book. And as you come off the elevator, you'll see us. We're right next to the organ, and it's a lot of fun. Like to take pictures with people. Bundy signs autographs. People ask for our autographs sometimes, which is weird. We appreciate it, but it's very strange.
It like is
Bundy's
weird.
The one that you get the autograph. We even had there are a couple people over the weekend who got intern Andrew's autograph. So
the intern signing.
And I can tell, by the way, I can tell behind the glass that Craig is really bothered by the fact that intern Andrew gets autograph requests and that Pagan hasn't boosted up Craig enough that Craig's getting a million autograph
requests.
Well,
he
deserves autograph requests, especially after the shorts he was wearing to the carnival yesterday.
I was just going to bring this up. He was at the carnival yesterday with Pagan, mm-hmm. and he looked like he had just come off of running a marathon. That's what he was wearing.
It said a 5K on the shirt. Craig, can I bring you on the screen? Do you care if I bring you on for a second? Oh, he said sure. All right, here you go.
Come on.
Craig, how many times have you been brought on screen for Crossing Broadcast?
Like 3.
Okay.
Once accidentally.
Okay. Craig, tell people what you were wearing yesterday to the
I had some nice 4-inch inseam chubbies on.
No. We didn't ask about never mind. 4-inch chubby. Okay. 4-inch chubbies. Got it.
Got to know your fashion, Russ. Got to know it.
Uh-huh.
And a nice adrenaline 5K tech shirt.
Okay. What is that a specific 5K race or is that a brand?
Were you wearing Sauconys or Asics?
They were Vans.
Or Ultras? What were they?
They were Vans?
They're just Vans.
Okay. Is that what you run in? You don't run in Vans.
Those socks
do you
on,
run in
though.
Vans? What do you run in? What do you run in?
Right now I'm running on.
Okay.
On running
I have
shoes.
Ons. I don't run in them though.
They're not great. You're missing.
I run in Ultras. And
that's
I don't
what
know how to feel
run in.
Okay. Well, see that? Maybe someday I could grow up to be just like Craig. Probably not. It's Craig, what's the longest race you've ever run? How many miles?
What's that?
What's the longest race you've ever run? How many miles?
50 miles.
Wait. You ran in a race that was 50 miles?
Yeah.
50? 5-0?
Is that an ultra marathon?
Yeah. Yeah, 5-0.
How many have you run?
I've done 3 ultras, a 50, an 8-hour, and a 40-miler.
That's insanity.
Oh, that's right, because the one that you ran was like around the neighborhood or whatever, and your friends were like sitting outside drinking and eating and cheering you on from like your front lawn or whatever.
Yeah,
we weren't invited to that.
We're not
hashtag friends with Craig, I guess, so we weren't invited to support him or trash talk him. Craig, I do have a question about logistics of running 50 miles.
Yeah.
You don't wear a diaper. Are you allowed to like pull off to take a leak? Do you pee down your leg? I've heard runners who do marathons say they pee down their leg. Like what's
You can do that. I'm not that talented.
Do you hold your urine for 8 hours?
I try to maintain a healthy level of dehydration.
And on that bombshell, it's time to end today's show.
Thank you
to everybody who tuned in on YouTube, on Facebook, on Twitter, and all of you who listen after the fact in the podcast feed. I don't even know what to do with that. We'll be back on Thursday. Kinker will be here. I don't know if he has a guest. I think I'm supposed to be here. I'm not contractually obligated to be, but we'll see if I am. I don't know who Kinker's getting. I'm sure he'll tell me about it at some point soon. Thank you to everybody who listened, who watched. Anthony, thank you for being my safety blanket, my blankie, Aunt San blankie.
Yeah.
And look forward to hearing all about what you thought of the show over on Twitter. You can find at Aunt San Philly. You can find me on Twitter at Joy on Broad. And of course, if you haven't done so, go over to YouTube. Like this video, share the video, subscribe, ring the bell so that you get notified whenever there's a Crossing Broad video. It's not only Crossing Broadcast, but also Anthony's baseball show with Big Bet Bob, Crossed Up, and when Pagan does his Man on the Street videos and everything else that we come up with at Crossing Broad, make sure that you go subscribe. We will talk to all of you again on Thursday. Have a great day, everybody, and remember, there's no fucking chance Howie Roseman brought Kenny Pickett in to lead this team for 2 years. And if he did... Shame.